It is Friday, June the 10th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, some believe Hamas carried out this week's deadly attack in Tel Aviv.
Hamas put themselves in the forefront of this situation, and I believe that they will have to bear the brunt of their retaliation.
Also ahead, charging an American who escaped the Islamic State, a big endorsement for a U.S. presidential candidate, plus remembering Muhammad Ali. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. Israeli security forces have arrested a third suspect in Wednesday's terrorist attack in Tel Aviv, which killed four, wounded five others. Police captured him Thursday in the West Bank town of Yatta. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the suspect a collaborator with the two Palestinian cousins from Yatta who opened fire on diners and shoppers at a popular marketplace. Both of those men are in police custody. The attack occurred across the street from the Israeli Defense Ministry and the Army headquarters, and Prime Minister Netanyahu met with security officials and visited the shooting site before making a statement.
This is a savage crime of murder and terrorism in the heart of Tel Aviv. It's done by criminal terrorists who don't value human life, who are willing to murder innocent citizens, who are sitting in a coffee shop. I think a larger tragedy was avoided by the resolute action of citizens, of security people, police. We're going to take the necessary steps to attack the attackers and to defend those who need to be defended.
The last such attack in Tel Aviv involved an Israeli Arab who shot and killed three people on New Year's Day. Israel has experienced a lull in months of Palestinian stabbing attacks on civilians with the security force members and has left nearly 200 Palestinians dead and nearly 30 Israelis. Hamas, the Islamist group which rules Gaza, welcomed the attack but did not claim responsibility. Regional analyst Joseph Olmert of the University of South Carolina tells VOA's Victor Beatty most attacks on targets in Tel Aviv have been thwarted.
You know, there have been many attempts to attack in Tel Aviv. They were foiled by the effective operations of the Israeli security forces, which tonight, unfortunately, it didn't work out properly. This was a terrible terror attack by murderers that are Hamas people.
How do you know that they're from Hamas?
Well, Hamas officially announced that they are praising the attack and that there will be more such attacks. And how would they know that there will be more such attacks unless they are planning them? They said these are going to be the surprises for the Israelis during the month of Ramadan. It has to be seen also in the context of the fact that the new defense minister, Victor Lieberman, is on record, the politician who criticized the current government until he joined it, for not doing enough against Hamas. So it will be a test, or if you will, a litmus test for him in terms of what you do rather than what you talk. Of course, the final decision rests with the Prime Minister, Netanyahu, but there is no question that there is strong pressure from within the government to have a very strong retaliatory activity. Hamas put themselves in the forefront of this situation, and I believe that they will have to bear the brunt of their retaliation.
There's been a lull over the past few months in what had been almost daily stabbings and shootings between Israelis and Palestinians. Is that linked to this, or is this something different?
I don't know if it's connected directly to any particular activity in the past, but because many of the perpetrators of the previous attacks were also from Hamas, one can see that there is a policy on the part of Hamas to try and provoke troubles, even though they don't do it directly and necessarily from the territory of Gaza out of fear for retaliation, but they encourage their people to do it in other places. The situation is very delicate because there are talks about resuming the peace process, and Netanyahu said that he would like to meet with Abbas. Abbas said that he would like to meet with Netanyahu. There was the French initiative. There are all kinds of other initiatives. So there's no question that those terrorists are acting in order to prevent any possibility of political and diplomatic move and progress. And we have to look at this situation from that perspective.
United States condemned this week's attack in Tel Aviv, calling it cowardly. Meantime, the publication Foreign Policy warns that tensions between Israel and Hamas are on the rise following a bus attack 2 months ago in Jerusalem that wounded more than 20 people. Hamas, it says, acknowledged the attack was carried out by one of its members. And among the stories we're following this hour, a former World Bank economist wins the Peru election, UN chief calling for talks to end tensions in Cambodia, a denial that Zambia's leader is in poor health, plus so long El Nino, hello La Nina. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. An American citizen who fled the United States and joined the Islamic State before claiming to have undergone a change of heart is back in this country to face terror charges. Mohammed Jamal Kawais was escorted into a federal courtroom in Alexandria, Virginia on Thursday. Kawais has told Kurdistan TV he went to the Middle East because of a girl, but ended up with IS and didn't like what he encountered.
I didn't really support their ideology, and that's when I decided I needed to escape.
26-year-old first made headlines when he was detained by the Kurdish Peshmerga fighters in northern Iraq in March, becoming one of just a handful of American IS to be captured on the battlefield. Several suicide attacks killed more than 20 people Thursday in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, despite the traditional truce for the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. That story now from Edward Uranian and the VOA Middle East Bureau in Cairo.
Thick clouds of black smoke poured from vehicles that caught fire following the explosion of a car bomb in Baghdad's eastern district of Al-Jadida. Pieces of metal and other debris littered the normally busy commercial thoroughfare as stunned residents milled around and sirens blared. A boy spoke with a policeman explaining how he had seen a car explode minutes earlier. Rescue workers pulled victims from the rubble as ambulances ferried casualties to nearby hospitals. Al Jazeera TV reported the Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the car bomb attack in Al-Jadida. A second suicide car bomb blew up next to an army checkpoint in the northern Baghdad suburb of Taji, killing 7 soldiers, according to Iraqi State TV. The car bomb attacks Thursday coincided with the ongoing government offensive to recapture the Islamic State-held town of Fallujah, 40 kilometers west of Baghdad. Government forces and their Shiite militia allies say that they have entered a southern district of the city. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi insists the morale of government forces is high during a visit to the front lines. He accused Islamic State militants of placing bombs in buildings, in vehicles, and under roads, slowing down government forces. He also accused Islamic State of using residents of Fallujah as human shields. Arab media report that Islamic State carried out 119 suicide attacks in Iraq, Syria, and Libya during the month of May. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
When the fight against the Islamic State extremists began 2 years ago, Iraqi Kurds from all walks of life left their families and joined the fighters known as the Peshmerga. VOA's Sharon Bain talked to one such fighter on the front line.
2 years ago, Rinas Rashid left his ambitions to be a world-class bodybuilder to join the Peshmerga and fight Islamic State extremists.
I felt it was my national duty to join the Peshmerga, and I'm happy to be with them. We are like brothers. I felt bad sitting at home while my Peshmerga brothers were here on the front line.
He is now a gunner and fought in the offensive that recently pushed IS militants back more than 20 kilometers.
I come from a modest family. I have 6 brothers and 3 sisters, and I live with my parents. Just like other Peshmerga, my family, my sisters, my brothers are worried about me. We keep in touch by phone.
He also talks to his girlfriend, sends her photos of her initials spelled out with spent bullet casings. He won a number of prizes as a bodybuilder.
It was my childhood dream. I reached some of my goals, but when the war started, I joined the Peshmerga and left that dream behind.
Once the fight against Islamic State is over, he says, he will pick up where he left off and maybe even get married. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Wardak, Iraq.
You can get more news always, any hour, at voanews.com. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. We turn now to U.S. politics, where President Obama has given his long-awaited endorsement of presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. It came shortly after meeting at the White House with Clinton's longtime rival, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone tells us now that the Obama endorsement is the latest step toward bringing the Democratic Party together after a long and at times bitter primary campaign.
For more than a year now,
President Obama wasted little time in throwing his support behind Hillary Clinton. It came in the form of a video put out by the Clinton campaign.
Look, I know how hard this job can be. That's why I know Hillary will be so good at it. In fact, I don't think there's ever been someone so qualified to hold this office. She's got the courage, the compassion, and the heart to get the job done.
The video was released shortly after Obama held a lengthy meeting with Clinton rival Bernie Sanders at the White House. Sanders told reporters he plans to meet with Clinton in the near future, and he sounded an optimistic note about Democrats coming together to face presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump.
I am going to do everything in my power, and I will work as hard as I can to make sure that Donald Trump does not become president of the United States.
Trump issued his reaction on Twitter, invoking his favorite description of Clinton as crooked Hillary. Obama's endorsement comes just days after Clinton secured the Democratic Party nomination after a primary battle that was longer and more divisive than expected. Clinton thanked supporters Tuesday after winning 4 of 6 contests, including California.
So we all owe so much to those who came before, and tonight belongs to all of you.
Sanders also met with Senate Democratic colleagues, including Senator Chuck Schumer of New York.
He's not worn down. He's not bitter. He's not angry. I told him I was proud of him and what he accomplished.
Democrats expect Sanders to get behind Clinton as the nominee soon, says analyst Kyle Condon.
I would expect Sanders to eventually get behind Hillary Clinton, perhaps not in a full-throated way. Now it's just a question of how you bring the party back together and how willing Sanders is to help in that effort.
Despite the bitter Democratic primary, Trump will be the ultimate unifier, says Bill Galston.
Mr. Sanders, if he's serious in saying, as he has frequently, that the differences between him and Secretary Clinton pale into insignificance in comparison to the differences between the two of them and Donald Trump, then he will do everything in his power to bring the party back together.
Clinton and Obama will make their first joint campaign appearance next week in Wisconsin. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And now it's time to check in with International Edition's social media expert, G. Abby Lee, about the response to President Obama's endorsement of Hillary Clinton. What you got, G?
Hi, Steve. The presumptive Democratic nominee shared that endorsement on both Facebook and Twitter and captioned it, "Honored to have you with me. I am fired up and ready to go."
Gee, just got to know what the online reaction was like. And, of course, are people talking about Mr. Obama's meeting with Bernie Sanders?
Steve, we usually like to tap into the public's opinion, but this back and forth between Clinton and presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump is too good to pass up. It began with Trump. He tweeted, "Obama just endorsed crooked Hillary. He wants four more years of Obama, but nobody else does." To that tweet, Clinton's response was short and not too sweet. She wrote, "Delete your account." Within 4 hours, that reply got nearly 300,000 likes, and that number is skyrocketing. Steve?
Many thanks to you, G. That is our own social media guru, G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and you can follow our program, International Edition, on Twitter at VOA_IE. A Muslim funeral for Muhammad Ali on Thursday drew thousands of admirers to the boxer's hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, where mourners prayed over the body of a man who battled in the ring and sought peace outside of it. An estimated 14,000 people, representing many races and creeds, attended. Ali, a three-time heavyweight boxing champion known for his showmanship, political activism, and devotion to humanitarian causes, died last Friday, late in the day, of septic shock. He had had Parkinson's disease for 3 decades. He was 74 years old. Ali will be buried later today, and former U.S. President Bill Clinton, Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan, and comedian Billy Crystal are among numerous luminaries who will be there. With Muhammad Ali's passing, the world is remembering a man, and you've heard a lot of the reports here on VOA, who transcended sports as well as culture and religion, and he definitely became a global icon. I Am Ali, a 2014 documentary by Claire Lewis, used audio tapes he recorded with the family and his friends to paint an intimate portrait of Muhammad Ali, the boxing legend. VOA's Penelope Palou has more.
My father has a lot of sides, and you hear about the fights. You don't hear about family that much and what that meant to him.
What's your dad's name?
Muhammad Ali.
No one, not even some members of his family, knew of the existence of these audio tapes until recently.
You're now 11 years old.
They thread the narrative of the boxing champion's life in Claire Lewis's documentary. Ali's daughter, Hannah, offered the tapes to Lewis.
Say, I love my daddy.
I love my daddy.
I love my poo-poo-head daddy.
Okay.
My father was always conscious about history. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why he made this series of audio tape cassette recordings.
Say, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Bounce like a butterfly.
The film shows the whole world in love with him. Testimonials of friends and adversaries paint the Olympian and three-time boxing champion Cassius Clay, later Muslim convert Muhammad Ali, as a sensitive, poignant, and courageous man. Because he refused to serve in the Vietnam War, he was stripped of his championship title, and his boxing license was revoked. His close friend, former football player Jim Brown, remembers.
He had a lot of courage. The risk he had to take, and then to be isolated, to have his crown taken away, not be able to make a living, that was difficult.
But he stuck to his convictions, and in 1974, at the age of 32, Ali made a comeback.
When George Foreman meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
He defeated formidable George Foreman and recaptured his title.
I get into the ring with the guy. I bluffed him. I done everything. Beat him up basically for about 5 or 6 rounds. I thought it was easy. Then about the 6th round, he whispered in my ear after I'd hit him in the side, "That all you got, George?" And that was about all I had.
I Am Ali does not say much about his broken marriages, but it highlights his bond with his children.
I was the Concord of boxing. I was at a high altitude than the rest, moving fast.
As Ali has aged, we hear him begin to slur his words, a sign of developing Parkinson's disease. He finally retired in the late 1970s, and in the mid-80s, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. But to the world and his children, he remains an icon of power and grace.
If anyone wonder why me, Muhammad Ali, is making these tapes, is because history's so beautiful.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And many thanks to you, Penelope. Stay with us. Much more ahead on International Edition. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Pharmaceutical medications. They are meant to make life better. But ironically, these compounds, when improperly disposed, can be dangerous for other life forms. The drugs are finding their way into lakes, streams, and other waterways, posing serious health concerns for aquatic life. Researchers have pointed to treated wastewater as the culprit, the main source of water that contains medicinal compounds and is released into the environment. But a new study published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology Letters finds a number of chemical compounds, such as the diabetes drug metformin, have also been found in lakes and streams that don't take on wastewater from treatment plants. Scientists from the United States Geological Survey suggest that runoff from urban areas and subsurface water movement may also be behind the flow of drugs into these waterways. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. There is a new fitness craze out there, has people using the skills used by circus performers to get into shape. International Edition's David Byrd tells us LA Cirque School combines a tough workout with fun and some flexibility.
When you go to the gym, you're used to seeing certain pieces of equipment, weight plates, a treadmill, a stair climber, maybe even a boxing bag. But a trapeze or a high wire? But that's exactly what you will find at Cirque School LA, which combines professional circus training and Pilates to give participants a great workout and teach them new skills. The school was founded by former Cirque du Soleil aerialist Aloysia Gavre. She was a Pilates coach with the famed Canadian circus and was in charge of helping the performers stay strong and fit and recover from injury. Gavre says that her school can help anyone willing to work to get in shape and to have fun.
Cirque School offers incredibly comprehensive programming. That way it kind of fits with whatever person walks in the door, their personality, their musculature, whatever it is that they're drawn to. So whether or not it's aerial arts or contortion or hand balancing, and each segment of the circus arts works on a different portion of their body.
Perhaps you've always wanted to learn to fly on a trapeze, or maybe you'd like to be an aerialist hanging from silken lines, or maybe hand balancing or contortion sparks your interest. Aloysia Gavre says that her Cirque School can help you reach that goal.
And the other thing about it is that it's also working your brain, creating all these geometric patterns that you have to remember how to utilize your body and your skills. So it's the brain and the musculature that are working and fusing together.
The instructors are working circus professionals who guide students in every exercise. Kelly Maglia, a costume designer from West Hollywood, is one of those students.
I always want to be here because I love the different variety of activities I can do that challenge both my strength, flexibility, and endurance, which is unusual. You know, there's other places you can go train in the various apparatus, but there's nowhere else that I know of that has pole, contortion, all the aerial apparatus. I do straps as well so that I could really build up strength.
54-year-old computer business analyst Bob Dean of West Hollywood says that Cirque School offers a much more interesting workout than he found at a traditional gym.
It's a great workout. It's very challenging. You get to do things, and it's fun also because you get to, like, accomplish things. It's more than just, you know, lifting a weight here and there. You actually get to learn how to do skills. And so you feel like you've accomplished something as well as getting a really good workout.
Though it's a lot of fun, physical therapy specialist Dr. Slava Shute says that, as with any workout, people doing Cirque School need to pay attention to their instructors and visit their doctor.
Most people are not usually accustomed to do these movements, so it's very, very important to do these things properly and to consult your Cirque fitness professional with technique to do things safely.
And while staying safe, you might get to learn to fly on a trapeze. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And guess what? It's time to say goodbye to El Nino. Scientists say it is dead. Good riddance, I say. Phenomenon triggered droughts in parts of Africa, India, Southeast Asia, drenched the United States, many places. Heating of the planet, 12 state record hot months on Earth. Now we have to contend with La Nina. It's coming next. It's the cooler cousin of El Nino. Of course, it's known for bringing rain to lots of Australia, Southeast Asia, making things cooler in Africa. That could be good, I guess. Lots of changes on the way. Thanks for joining us on the Voice of America for International Edition. Latest world news is straight ahead. We have to say thank you to Tracy Carter. He's our director. Great guy. Engineer Jimmy Cook, another great guy. I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a wonderful Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, has granted KSH 380 million to Kenyan innovators as part of its Feed the Future Kenya Innovation Engine, or KIE, an effort to reward and improve agriculture-based innovations. To date, more than 57,000 rural households have benefited from KIE-supported innovations and attracted nearly $1.4 million in public and private sector investment. At a launch held May 31st in Nairobi, the agency granted funds to 10 local firms to transform simple agriculture initiatives into valuable projects in Kenya. Such projects have played key roles in improving incomes in individual households, while at the same time reducing poverty levels and improving food security among communities. Following a vetting process, six of these pilot rollout grants have already been awarded, and the Innovation Engine is poised to grant funding and technical assistance to an additional four advanced innovations, said Karen Freeman, the Mission Director, USAID, Kenya and East Africa. Kenya Innovation Engine is a five-year program implemented in collaboration with USAID partner Land O'Lakes International Development that identifies, nurtures, and brings to scale innovative, private sector-oriented solutions to food security, undernutrition, and poverty. The Innovation Engine collaborates with entrepreneurs who design new concepts, products, and services to maximize their commercial value. The initiative was launched in 2012 with funding from USAID. Kenya Innovation Engine has so far provided seed funding and technical expertise to 22 innovations with a promise of more support for food security and social support initiatives. This initiative has contributed substantively to building the businesses and institutions involved in these areas, said Ms. Freeman. Among the benefits achieved by the initiative, more than 57,000 households reached by new technologies during the proof of concept stage, 30,000 farmers made a repeat purchase of the innovation, Smallholders have recorded $6.7 million in incremental sales since adopting these innovations, and enterprises created 1,458 jobs at the proof-of-concept innovation testing stage. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Kenya, to improve agriculture for the benefit of Kenyans and the Africa region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.